Yes, sir, we promised you a great
gorgeous George. Here we
go.
Andre, the Giant.
WrestleMania.
Do I have everybody's attention now?
Whiskey Rebellion Radio is a Pantless Aggression production.
The internet is a completely different culture, isn't it?
You said it. Everything here is immediately followed by sarcastic comments and nasty responses.
Yep. We're finally where we belong.
Well, I woke up Sunday morning with no way to hold my head. That didn't hurt. And the beer I had for breakfast wasn't bad, so I had one more for dessert.
Together again. Gee, it's good to be together again. I just can't imagine that you've ever been gone.
And hey, now, baby, get into my biblical.
Good morning, FTR Radio. Well, and you know what time it is? Sunday morning, and that means while everyone else is at church, you're laying in bed hungover and spending some time with the rest of us. Rule breakers and drug takers and, God bless them, the bottom-bashing fornicators. That's right, it's Whiskey Rebellion Radio. I, of course, am your host, the Rated R Republican, the social media messiah. Blogger without a cause, not only a voice for the voiceless, but the heart and soul of YR's Nationwide.
Look in my eyes, what do you see? The cost of something
Long Island's own John Brodigan, and doing it proud and doing it loud with me as he does each and every week, because he owes it to the people too. The axe to my smash, the hawk to my animal. Mark Radulich, how the fuck are you this week?
You ever see the Disney cartoon with Goofy as he comes running across? This is every Goofy cartoon, but I'm thinking of one in particular where he just comes running across the room and he's just sticking his foot into everything and knocking pans over, and by the end of it, he's just created a mess and he gets there and it's too late. Okay, that's how I just walked into the door, man. I know it's Sunday morning, but I just came in the door and it's like I got a kid pulling me one way and a wife pulling me the other and a dog in my lap and a thing in my head and a cake in my face and hi, how are you?
You know something? It actually took me a minute before I realized where you were going with that.
You know, I do that to other people on podcasts where I start going in one direction and like a drunk person behind the wheel, I'm all over the road. But somehow or other, I managed to park ass backwards in a parking spot. Perfect.
and then you have that awkward time where you can literally hear the blank stares that they give you.
And somehow or other, we managed to get through a show.
Speaking of which, we do have a good show this week. Well, we do it. We have a good show every week. But we're going to be talking to Kurt Schlichter, author of a new book, that the title of which I unfortunately don't have up for me right now, just because, you know, we don't prepare for the show. I'll get you that later.
With Kira Valley Radio, we prepare for nothing.
We're going to be talking about guns. We're going to be talking about Muppets. But most importantly, and this is actually it's a good question, and I'm going to pose it to you, Mark, since, I mean, you and I are both music people. I mean, you know, we can't sing, we can't play, we have no actual talent, we just like listening to it. But I was reading an article in Slate, and it poses an interesting question. At what point is your child old enough to let them know that, listen, people have shitty taste in music?
You know, I don't think they're ever too young. Well, they might be a little too young the day they get out of the womb. Yeah, you know, like as they're washing the blood and the gunk off and cutting the cord, that might be a little too soon to say to them, look, some people like your mother like the sister Hazel, and that's just something you're going to have to live with.
And to those of you eating Sunday brunch while listening to this, we apologize.
Oh, believe me, if you're listening to this show, I'm sure you've had to deal with childbirth in some form or fashion. Nobody cares about that stuff. But seriously, folks, Yeah, I read through the article, and the one that we're talking about is Trust Me on This, Abbey Road, from Salon.com. And what it talks about is sort of the debate over music. And it's really an article about taste masquerading as truth. It talks about, you know, you come to a piece of music of some kind, and it speaks to you in a way. And if you're anything like us, or like the author describes in this article, you want to share that truth with other people. You want to share that music. And what they're getting to is there's always that moment where you bare your soul and you show it to someone and you go, look at this thing. It's beautiful. It's great. I'm so happy I found it. And the person looks at it and says, it's a piece of crap. And then what are you supposed to do with that moment in your life? And God knows I've had it a bunch of times. I mean, what about you, John? Have you ever run into that scenario where you just think something, just beauty has landed in your lap and someone just takes a big poop on it? Again, Sunday morning breakfast, folks.
you know what's really bad? I mean, it's been a while since you've dated, but I'm sure you've had this happen also. You know, you find these girls occasionally. There aren't many of them, but you do find these girls with their music people where you can – back in the days when we had CD stores, we would go CD shopping. And it's like, wow, this is cool. I could, like, discover new songs. And there's this person who I'm with all the time that could get excited about it, and she'll find a new song, and I'll get excited about it. Eventually, you guys break up, and then you have to sit through conversations with other girls that literally you don't think even heard of music.
These are usually the people who pepper their Facebook and Twitter status updates with LOL, no matter what they're saying.
Yes. My father died, LOL.
I'm drinking coffee this morning, LOL.
Hey, look, it's the Great Depression, LOL. JK, JK.
I can guarantee if one of my friends is listening to this, we're no longer friends, LOL.
LOL.
LOL. Anywho, LOL. No, it's true. I love my wife. But one of the things that I kind of had to take and own and appreciate was that we were not going to agree on art in every single way. We agree on the important things.
She does have some bad taste in music. I mean, who?
Oh, does she? I'm actually pretty notorious for making fun of her constantly for that. But, you know, where it counts, where it's important, values, child rearing, money, et cetera, we're pretty much in sync. Where we tend to disagree, not always, but definitely. I mean, look, I'm looking at our bookshelf, and, you know, here's my books. The Science of Star Wars and The Shadows of History, The Really Inconvenient Truth, Intellectual Morons, The First World War. Here's her books. Janet Ivanovich's Wicked Appetite, Harry Potter.
50 Shades of Grey.
Little Women and Werewolves. Okay, that one I think I bought her. You know, more Janet Ivanovich, et cetera, et cetera. Shopaholic. You get where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter in the end. You know, her experiences in life, you know, brought her to Sister Hazel and Fall Out Boy and the Beatles. You know, my experiences in life brought me to Pantera. And as long as someone can sit across from you and say, look, it's meaningful to me because I appreciate it because, and give you a rational explanation, I'm kind of okay with it. Where I start to go crazy and kind of get that same thing that you were talking about, where you're sitting across from the person and all you can hear is bats, you know, just in, you know, just bats up there and an echo, is like, well, why do you like that song? Oh, it's cool. It's music. It's got a beat I can dance to. That's usually when I have to get up and walk out of the room.
But listen, while we're talking about your wife, crickets. I just heard your blank stare. While we're talking about your life, let me ask you something. And, you know, this might be too personal for talk radio, but, you know, whatever. She's not listening.
Hi, I'm Mark Radulich. Have we met?
if you were to assign your wife to a Muppet, what kind of a Muppet would she be?
Oh, Segway. My God, she's any particular Muppet?
What type of Muppet?
She is – she likes to fancy herself as something of an orderly type of Muppet, wherein, in fact, I would describe her more as a chaotic Muppet.
Okay. Explain.
Okay. I don't know. I feel like we've lost the audience. We should actually tell them what we're talking about first.
Go ahead. Another, just Google Slate and Muppet.
All right. There was an article on Slate.com that John posted, and I thought was hilarious, and we said, well, we should talk about this. The best part of this article isn't the article itself, by the way. It's having to explain it to a 60-year-old three times and then giving up. My father, for some odd reason, read this and was like, I don't get it. It's a chaos theory, a unified theory of Muppet types, and basically the person it's a creative article. It's essentially about nothing, but you know, it's creative. It's funny. It was a good, you know, waste of 5 minutes, a fun waste. But what this person does is it breaks the world into two types of Muppets. You've got chaos Muppets like Cookie Monster and Grover and Animal, you know, that side of the Muppet pantheon. Boy, I bet you've never heard Pantheon and Muppet in the same sentence. And then you've got Order Muppets, you know, Bert, Scooter. You know, there's Muppet, Sam the Eagle, John's favorite Muppet.
You're all weirdos.
You know, you've got the crazy, zany monster types. These are the people in your life who are, you know, the creators, the creative types, the ones, you know, the ones that wear the pants on the head and the shoes on their hands and the shirt on their legs and then can give you an explanation for why it all makes sense. And then you have the order Muppets, who are the people who, you know, things have to be organized in a certain way. You have to make sense of things. These are the ones who, you know, okay, if you want to wear your shirt on your – if you want to wear your pants on your head, that's fine, but you're going to do it this way. You know, it's the people that keep the pants on the head people from running into the street, you know, and into traffic. So back to your initial question, despite her best intentions to be a order Muppet, boy, is she a chaos Muppet. She won't admit it either. And I've gone over the article with her in depth, because that's what we do here in the Rattle of Telfold. And I've tried to explain to her. I'm like, no, I've seen – look, you're home for 1 week on summer vacation, and I can't find anything. You're a chaos Muppet.
Including your pants.
Including my pants. You would think they'd be in the laundry, but they're not.
I am happily a chaos Muppet. I wear that with a badge of honor.
Yeah, you really are a chaos Muppet.
Dude, I took the day off from work today just to clean stuff. 5 30-gallon bags of garbage out of my room, 2 out of my car.
Okay, you're also a slob, but
well, that too.
But you can tell which one of us is a chaos Muppet and which one of us is the order Muppet on this show. John's approach to a topic, you know, is essentially the same as George Lucas. Fuck it, I'll just start in the middle. And let people figure it out.
Yes.
Mark's approach. Let me explain everything. First, the dinosaurs came, you know, and we just go on from there.
I'm going to start at the end. It's like, thank you for joining us. Here's some bumper music.
the really funny part, and I actually don't want to read this, because I think it's great. And I think there's, if anything can be pulled out of this that's useful, other than, you know, the world is made up of orderly and chaotic people, it's this paragraph. Perhaps the best determinant of your Muppet classification, however, is your partner. Order Muppets tend to pick chaos Muppets for their life partners, as I did, cookies notwithstanding. Thus, if you're in a long-term relationship with a chaos Muppet, there's a pretty good chance you're Bert. If you're married to an order Muppet, you may well be the Swedish chef. And by all that is holy, don't marry your same type if you can help it. That's where baby elbows come from. It's also where crack babies come from.
So basically, you're Bert and having a gay affair with the Swedish chef.
I would like to think of my wife as more Ernie, but that's fine. Whatever makes you happy, John.
The Swedish chef makes everyone happy.
No, he's talking to Ernie.
Why did the
chicken
cross
the
road?
Pop
but the angry Swede was chasing him with a cleaver.
I still do the popcorn pop it in 3D bit. And I will literally throw things at people when I do that. Like, popcorn popping in 3D, which is a little bit different than my jerking off and throwing it in your face gesture. A little bit different.
I still use that one. But,
so do you. I did that at work the other day in front of one of my coworkers. We were talking about something, and I just went, yeah, you know, and she didn't and had never seen me do it before, almost fell out of her chair laughing.
See, and if we were a professional show, we would have a soundboard full of Muppet clips for this.
Again, when the producer and the host of the show is also a chaos Muppet, we're lucky we can get the taping on time.
And on that note, screw you. We're gonna take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll have Kurt Schlichter, Mr. Caring himself. You're listening to Whiskey Rebellion Radio on the mighty FDR.
LOL.
This is Andrew Breitbart, and you're listening to FTR Radio.
The train! Let's speed it! Come on, hurry! We can make it! Hey, stop! It's too late to cross!
Hold up!
Hop!
That's a dangerous game you two were playing. Listen to your friend Chris. Those gates are provided as a warning to let you know that it's not safe to cross.
We could have been hurt. Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
Hi, doggy. Nice doggy. Here, boy. Come on. Hi, fella. Hey!
Don't run.
Mutt.
Walk away slowly.
He tried to bite me.
Never try to pet an animal you don't know. He may be lost, sick, or scared.
You mean he might be dangerous?
That's right. If we don't know, we leave him alone.
And we don't get bit. Now I know.
And no one is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
Welcome back to Whiskey Rebellion Radio.
It's a giant horse's ass. You're watching Fox.
LOL.
Our guest, it never gets old, and it just started. Our guest this week, if you follow politics on Twitter, you know this man, right, for Breitbart. He's an author. Go to the #Caring. Got up bright and early just to tell us about his brand new book. Actually, not making his return to the show because it's the first time he's been on this one. Kurt Schlichter, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How's the city of Los Angeles treating you today?
Oh, it's an unbelievable hellhole full of degeneracy and perversion. Other than that, it's terrible.
Speaking of which, kind of, and I want to get the book in a second. We were just discussing an article that we found on, if you'll forgive me, Slate. But
is Slate still a thing?
It is. Apparently, it is still a thing. But
is another one washing over how women are supposed to deal with patriarchal oppression in their personal relationships with their boyfriends, or something along that line?
Actually, even more important than that.
Wow, Slate's really expanding.
Yes, it's an important question. I want to get your take on. When is your child young enough to explain to them that people have terrible taste in music?
A child is never too young. I'm the guy who used Shriekback's hit Nemesis, the only song in the alternative songbook that uses the word airstrike. I used it as a lullaby.
You know, I've been playing my niece the Rockabye lullabies, where they take rock songs and put, like, you know, animal noises in it. I think I may try your routine.
Yeah, just go for the good music. I mean, I once had My little daughter is about to graduate from second grade, singing along with "Love Will Tear Us Apart."
Wait, the inaccessible?
I figure since she's growing up in L.A., she ought to get a depressing, depraved view of human nature. You know, it's kind of like practice.
It makes sense, you know. You have to start them off young.
Oh, absolutely.
But you did just finally finally released the book we've been hearing about for a while. I Am Conservative, Uncensored, Undiluted, and Absolutely Un-PC, available
on
Kindle and Amazon. So
yeah,
I guess
it's been hailed as one of the books of 2012.
I guess the important question would be, let's say I'm a liberal progressive. What would I enjoy from this book?
Absolutely nothing. It's not even carbon neutral. I actually left my car running while I was writing it to ensure that I contributed to global warming. I'm against cold in all its forms.
Just in case the fact that you're conservative in L.A. doesn't needle them enough, you have to make sure you give them a little extra push.
Well, they actually like me being conservative because, you know, because I have a military background and everything, and I'm right-wing, and I'm not a freaking idiot. All those things in L.A. make me count as diversity.
So basically, you know, you're the token smart guy, the token military guy, and the token conservative all in one.
I know. If I had a limp, it would be perfect.
What made you decide to write the book?
You know, a couple things. First of all, I store up my one-liners, essentially, because I was a stand-up comic. You know, you don't throw a joke away. Everybody thinks, stand-up comic, he goes up and makes a whole new set every night. No. You find the jokes at work, and you keep them, and you keep everything you write. You go back over them, and you find stuff, and it inspires you. And that's why I did kind of with Twitter, because as you know, you may know, once or twice, I've tweeted.
A little bit, yeah.
A bit. Not a lot, by any means. But I kept a lot of that stuff because some of it I thought was funny. Otherwise, I wouldn't tweet it. I erase a fair number of tweets before I send them, believe it or not. I had this stuff, and I thought, look, there's a lot of people who are creepy shut-ins who do nothing but read my Twitter feed. Maybe somebody would want to hear about it. And, you know, maybe somebody would want to give me money for hearing about it because, you know, in this whole kind of right-wing rebel media thing that you're a part of and I'm kind of a part of, one of the big buzzwords is monetization. Hey, how can we make some money doing this, providing this service? I mean, there's a lot of stuff we're out here doing for free. We like it, but who wouldn't want to do his hobby as a real job, right?
Yeah.
So I thought, well, we'll see what I can do. Maybe I can do a book. I always wanted to do a book, but, you know, I don't particularly want to go ask some left-wing New York twerp, hey, is it okay if you guys decide to publish this book and pay me a couple pennies on the dollar? Because as a lawyer, I look at book contracts, and they're always awful unless you're like Stephen King.
Yeah.
Or
unless you're the attorney.
Exactly. Now, here's the thing. I can go on Kindle. I can do the whole book myself. This is kind of an Andrew Breitbart thing. He was out there about do your own thing, do it yourself, kind of like punk rock bands in the 70s. You know, no label's going to put out their horrible music. You know, they got to press their own 7-inch singles so people like me would go out and buy them. Well, this is my 7-inch single. This is it. You know, I went and I wrote the stuff. I typeset it. Some of my friends on Twitter edited it. My wife helped. She came up with the cover concept and shot it.
Which is brilliant.
John Gabriel came along and helped with some of the titling on the cover. I uploaded everything, and within, you know, a few hours, it was up for sale. And then how'd I promote it? I went out and told people on Twitter. And, dude, they bought it. It was like, for a while, it was number one on Amazon's political humor. Now it's number two. Right after, the latest Obama memoir.
Well, those are generally funny and fictional.
Exactly. Well, it's also under fiction. So, you know, fantasy.
The
50 Shades of Lame.
I think I saw that on an Obama 2012 bumper sticker.
You know, that's just racist in some way, or Islamophobic. I don't really know. I'm just assuming.
Well, actually, I'm from New York, and I believe it was an Obama supporter, so therefore it can't be racist.
I think that's it's got to be sexist or homophobic or, I don't know, environmental justice. Is that a thing?
I'm hey, ho, ho.
Hey, ho, ho, living outside of caves has got to go. Again, I am for global warming in all its forms. Not only does it keep me, well, warm, thus giving me an excuse to drink Dos Equis with lime, it also makes my hot ex-model wife wear less clothing. And she's Cuban, so that takes some work.
And there's your diversity, and that's what it's all about.
Exactly. Oh, wait, I forgot. I'm a horrible imperialist or something.
Well, no, I think you're
a capitalist. Yeah, I'm just horrible. Fill in the blank. You know, that's the thing. With liberalism is like political Mad Libs, and all the words are like racist, sexist, imperialist. You just use them. You know, wherever there's a blank, you just stick one in. I was walking down the street, and racist came up and talked to me, you know?
And then he sounded like stupid because George Bush.
Yeah. It was the fault of Bush. I like how Bush is so awesomely powerful. He's still screwing up the economy 3.5 years later. That dude was amazing.
You know, I was actually impressed with George Bush when I found out he was the criminal mastermind who caused 9/11 and brought down the Twin Towers.
Exactly, as he was setting the chemtrails with the Bilderbergers.
You know, but the fact that from the comfort of his ranch, he got like a former state senator with no experience hired, knowing that people would still be blaming him, and he's like pulling the strings to like bankrupt the country just to like for Romney's comeback. It's brilliant. He's a genius.
Exactly, he's like, you know, the villain playing the organ. It's amazing. He's the abominable Dr. Fibes. God, I wanted to make that reference for so long. Thanks for letting me spike.
Well, I'm glad I could help with that. And I think Liberal Mad Libs, I think we just discovered your second book.
Thank you. Liberal Mad Libs. It'd be a pretty dull book. I'm actually working on the next book, believe it or not. Because I got a little extra material running around. That's the stuff in this book, which is not all tweets, but it does have like some lists of one-liners.
Mm-hmm.
Because the idea about the book, dude, is, you know, you get a beer, that's important.
Yes, it is.
You sit down, you start kindling, and you go anywhere in the book. You know, hit about halfway down, boom, you can start reading. Okay? You know, you can start reading. Hopefully you'll laugh. Hopefully you'll go, hey, you're right. You should be cold and hungry if you refuse to work. Consequences are a good thing. You know, and these little ideas will start to catch on. Because, you know, dude, too long conservatives have apologized for the consequences of conservatism. Conservatism is a rigorous ideology. It is not easy. It is not warm and cuddly. It does not help your self-esteem. It says, dude, you're responsible for what you do and what you are.
Yeah.
And you're responsible for the consequences of your choices. And I'm not going to bail you out when you do something stupid. So don't do stupid things. But if you choose to do something like not work because you want to, you know, write your great American novel or play your bongo drums or whatever, that's cool. I'm not going to tell you what to do because I'm not a liberal and I don't feel I should be telling other people what to do. But conversely, I don't want to hear your belly aching, you know, when you got goosebumps and hunger pangs because you got no dough to go buy yourself food and a roof because you didn't work. That's the trade-off.
Yeah,
you get autonomy over your life, but you got to fund it, buddy. And if you don't want to work, you're not going to be, you know, full. And that's not a bad thing. Look, liberalism is about ameliorating the consequences of bad decisions in order to get losers on the Democratic plantation forever. I'm against all these things.
I actually got an argument with someone recently over the Equal Pay for Equal Work Act, just because, you know, if I show the initiative to either work harder than you or make it look like I'm working harder than you when I'm not, I deserve to get paid more.
Look, I'm against equal pay for equal work. I'm for you being able to go and negotiate for whatever you'll work for.
Yeah.
All right? You know, I'm a lawyer. I charge people hundreds of dollars an hour. I charge different people different things. Because some clients are annoying. I have the idiot tax. They get tacked on about $150 an hour more an hour. They do. I go, but why are you charging me so much? I go, because I will not work for you because I don't like you, and I won't work for you unless you pay me a lot more. This other guy who I like, I'll spend time with him and work for him for a lot less.
Makes sense to me.
It's called the idiot tax. It's, life's not fair. Life shouldn't be fair. You know what fairness is? Fairness is a concept designed by high school juniors to try and guilt their stupid, spineless parents into doing the wrong thing instead of saying, hey, shut up. You live here. You're going to do what I say or you're out on your butt. That's what fairness is.
The way you did the book, and I know, you know, Phil Klein said other people have done it, where basically, you know, you write the book on your laptop, you upload it on Kindle, and it's instant publishing, and you start to make some money. What do you say to, because I've noticed a lot of people on our side who do what we do, yes, you know, the rich people on our side don't invest as much in, like, the grassroots as the rich people on the other side do, but I seem to hear a lot of whining just because, why won't these people on our side give me money for doing what I already do for them for free? What do you say to people?
Well, why
like
would I give you money for doing what you want to do for free? Hey, if you're fetching my latte and I'm not getting a bill, I'm going to let you keep fetching my latte. And if you hand me a bill, then I'm going to reevaluate just how much do I like lattes. Maybe I'll keep giving you. Maybe I'll start paying you. Or maybe I'll just say, meh. It was nice having a latte, but it's not $6 a latte nice. Nah. Now, look, the magic of Andrew Breitbart, who at some level was an inspiration to me. I knew the guy. He brought me into the big sites. I see him as a visionary. I see him as a guy who really saw that technology is allowing people to follow their own muse, so to speak. And that's what I did. I don't need a gatekeeper. I don't need to ask anybody whether I can write a freaking book. Dude, I wrote a book. It's selling. It sells every couple of minutes. I got it up on the computer. I see how many it sold. And I don't have to ask permission. There's no agent who's telling me, well, I don't know. I don't know if you want to do that. There's no publisher going, well, it isn't exactly our style. Nobody. It's me and the audience. They have cut out the middleman. Content is king today, not the distributor. Remember, 30 years ago, you had three television channels, ABC, NBC, CBS. I only remember them because I'm old. Okay? At that point, content didn't matter because you had three choices. Today, besides having 100 choices on TV and cable and satellite, you can get on the Internet. You watch what you want. Old stuff, new stuff, weird stuff, perverted stuff, whatever. Cinemax, who knows? Content. And all these guys need content. They are starving for content. People want stuff. People want the kind of stuff that I'm selling in my book. And they're buying it. And I'm digging it. And I'm going to be able to pay for my kids' braces, which is kind of cool.
That also works, too. So,
there's another thing. Healthcare. Don't even get me started.
Actually, I think we'll have to have you back for that because that's like a full two-hour show.
Holy cow. Now I can make it real simple for you. Here's my healthcare plan. Pay for your own damn healthcare. You're a grown man. Stop me looking for handouts, you bum. There, I'm done. Can we have beers now?
I'll have one.
Just one?
Well, for now. I still have to drive in a little bit. But so what's your advice to, say, the conservative activist or the conservative tweeter or the not liberal listening to this who's doing what they're doing now but wants to find a way to make money on it?
Look, I found a way to make a little bit of money. You know, look, I'm not going to get rich off this Amazon thing.
Yeah.
But it's a few bucks. I've got a little machine that sends me money every once in a while. It's kind of cool. I don't know about monetization. That's a big question. A guy with a huge radio contract like Glenn Beck, I guess he just got $100 million. That's a way to make money. Writing a book like my pal David Limbaugh, a traditional book, that's a way to make money. But this is a way to make money. It's a way that people will stand up. They're getting a product that they want, and they're paying for it. And I think it's interesting. I think, though, that free entertainment, whether it's just watching people's Twitter feeds or even the Breitbart sites, I think free stuff's going to be it's going to be here to stay to some extent. And I don't know the answer on monetization. I just don't know it. If somebody wants to fly me across the country to talk to their people and amuse them with my anecdotes, and they want to hand me a check to do that, that's cool. I'd like that. Hasn't happened
That's a way to monetize yourself.
That is a way. Look, everyone's feeling this thing through. We don't know exactly where we're going. We're all touching one part of the elephant. Is it a snake?
Yeah.
Is it a, is it a house? What is this thing we're all feeling? We don't know. And that's kind of the beauty of it. We're in the Wild West phase. We're at the new frontier. We don't know how things are going to go. It's going to go some way. Somebody's going to have a good idea. We're going to have pioneers out there. I've got my ebook going. What about an e-magazine? Who knows? Maybe I'll be able to talk people into paying me $1 a month to get my e-magazine. I don't know.
Instead of O for Oprah, just S for Schlichter.
Well, K for the K-Dog. That is how I roll. Hey, K-Dog fancy. How's that?
You know something?
I'm liking it. There's some synergy here.
I'm actually thinking of something along the line, of like a Maxim magazine, only for conservatives and people who don't suck.
I have got to say, the women on the conservative side, ooh la la, they are so much harder than the liberal women. It's just a fact.
They're so much harder, but they have what do you call that word? Morals.
Try marrying one. Holy cow, it's awesome. Because then it's like game on.
Of course, I
dated some conservative girls before I got married. And let me tell you, when you're in a steady monogamous state, game on, buddy. Look, liberal women, they just want to hug and talk about their feelings. I hate that. Conservative women, they want to get down to business. They want to make it happen. These are women who don't have time for your cuddling. So...
yeah, but the thing is that they want to make it happen, but sometimes require you to put in an effort in the first place.
Look, I hate effort as much as any man. My anti-effort agenda is perfectly clear. However, we're conservatives, dude. Sometimes you gotta work for it. You can't expect a government program to hand you, hot girls.
You can't expect the government to just hand you a hot Brazilian wife just because you think you deserve one.
Exactly. Although I do believe that's one of the entitlement bills coming out through the Democratic Senate right now.
It'll probably start in New York.
California.
Do you have the topic for the second book, or are you just in the, you open a bottle of Crown and you're sitting in front of your computer phase?
I'm working through the bottle, and I'm thinking about it. There's some directions I can go. I could go with I am a liberal. I could go with I am a conservative too, the quickening. I had a long number of tweets that really opened up something I could expand greatly on, Kurt's parenting hints. For instance, I answered the question, no, 6 years old is not too old to start weapons training.
Or that could actually segue into the Kurt Schlichter Guide to Life.
Well, I am known as the Conserve a Life Coach.
Yes, you are.
I've been around 47 years. I've done a few things. I've been a few places. I've got some insights that I think I could share with a lot of young conservatives. I have actually got young conservative dudes come up to me for, romance advice.
That's awesome.
They're like, Kurt, you're a playa. Obviously. Your wife's an ex-model. Word. Can you help me out? Because love ain't flowing. Dude, come under my wing.
Especially when so many of us are so bad at it.
See, that's the kind of cooperation that I believe in, the kind of collective effort that I can accept. Now, of course, I have to be paid, usually in alcohol. But, I am willing to supply my experience to others. Of a conservative bent to help them realize their full potential, whether it's in romance or otherwise.
The book is called I Am a Conservative, Uncensored, Undiluted, and Absolutely Un-PC, available on Kindle. Kurt Schlichter, thanks for joining us. We'll be looking forward to the next book and another 100 tweets or so probably by the time you hang up the phone, and we'll talk to you soon.
There's six on the way right now. Hey, thanks a lot for having me. It's been great.
Take care, man.
Bye.
And we'll be right back, LOL. You're listening to Whiskey Rebellion Radio on the mighty FDR.
I think I made friends left to talk to. No way to run when I'm in trouble. You know I'd do anything for you. Spend another keep it on the cover. I just want to use your love tonight. And I don't want to lose your love tonight.
This is Andrew Breitbart, and you're listening to FPR Radio.
The storm knocked down that big wire.
Hey, let's jump our bikes over it.
Now, we better move it off the road.
No, you better leave that power line right where it is. There's enough electricity there to fry an elephant.
We didn't think it was dangerous.
You'd have found out too late. Remember, never play around electrical wires or you could be playing with fire.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
What a great campsite.
Yeah, here's more wood for the fire.
No, my poles are on fire. Run for the stream.
Don't run. Here, let me wrap this around you. You okay?
Lucky thing you were around, Spirit.
Lucky thing you didn't run. Remember, running only makes the fire worse. If your clothes catch fire, wrap yourself in a rug or blanket.
And roll on the ground to smother the flame. Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe.
Let's go on the way tonight. No regrets to serve. We can dance until we die. You and I will be young forever.
You make me feel like I'm living a teenage dream. When you turn me on, I can't breathe. Let's run away and don't ever look back. Don't ever look back.
Welcome back to the Whiskey Rebellion.
It's a giant horse's ass. You're watching Fox.
LOL.
It never gets old. And it's only been about 45 minutes.
You know something? I'm surprised it took us this long to stumble on our new running gag.
I did a podcast earlier in the week about the Pacquiao-Bradley fight with Jeremy Lambert's Man Cave podcast, which you can hear on 411mania.com and his personal blog, Man Cave, something or other.
Actually, Mark, quick production note. We'll save the bit about the guns. I completely forgot that I wanted to talk to you about the Pacquiao fight, so let's stick with this for a little bit.
Oh, good. Hey, I could do Pacquiao all day long. But at the end of doing that podcast, he was like, go ahead and plug whatever it is you're doing. So I told him about the Whiskey Rebellion, Whiskey Rebellion Radio, and he cut me off and he was like, that's an awesome name. Honestly, I think it's a bit of a misnomer. I don't drink like I used to. I don't know if you do, and we certainly don't do a lot of alcohol on the show. We do running gags repeatedly, ad nauseum, into the ground. It would have been more appropriate to call this show Ground and Pound because we beat things to death. So I honestly think we effed up. We should have just called this, Mark and John Return with Running Gag Radio.
So speaking of LOL, Manny Pacquiao is no longer undefeated, huh?
What can you say about this? I watched the fight live. I was part of the Twittersphere and as I said on Lambert's podcast, had all the people watching the fight been in a building together when that decision was announced that Bradley had won by split decision, they'd have burned that sumbitch down. There would have been a riot in the street, but instead we were all a bunch of nerds on computers, so nothing happened. But except people were indignant, and Dana White was schizophrenic.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you saw Dana White, who has to cooperate with the Nevada State Athletic Commission, to do shows in Nevada, Las Vegas, Nevada, for mixed martial arts for the UFC, blasted them via Twitter about how they're the worst sports commission in the States. And I was just like, seriously, you fired a guy for saying something very similar to that, you idiot. Anywho.
Well, no. He didn't know. He fired someone for accusing the commission of being racist.
Oh, okay. So incompetent good, racist bad. Got it. I have to write these things down because I can't keep track of this nonsense. Anywho's. So as I said on there, here's the problem with the Pacquiao-Bradley fight. If people haven't seen this yet, because you've turned into a political talk show of sorts and you don't follow sports, it's a 12-round fight. Manny Pacquiao spends most of the fight not fighting for 2 minutes out of a 3-minute round, and in the last minute of each round, beating the snot out of this guy. If you looked at the statistics were he threw less punches, but he landed more, as opposed to Bradley, who threw everything but the kitchen sink at him and landed less. And yet, they awarded the guy who threw a lot, but landed less, the fight, as opposed to awarding the fight to the guy, mind you, they're fighting, if that wasn't clear, who landed more punches. And not only more punches, these weren't like, as Nick Diaz would say, baby leg kicks that don't do any damage. These weren't pitter-patter shots. These were power shots.
Bomb.
He landed more power shots than Pacquiao, than Bradley. You were about to cut me off there?
No, not at all.
Okay. So, I mean, so there's this one argument going, how do you as a judge view something like that and say, okay, well, the guy who got hit more won the fight, as if somehow they're sympathetic to abused housewives, and they were like, you know what, for abused housewives everywhere, we're giving this fight to Bradley. No. What's really funny about that is in the aftermath of all of this, while everyone was kind of focusing on, oh my God, this is the death of boxing, and it's a conspiracy theory, and Bob Arum is Vince McMahon, is George Bush, George Bush, Bob Arum, and Vince McMahon, the trio of devils in this world.
Pacquiao. It was me all along.
Damn you, Bob Arum. Damn you to hell. Anywho, Pacquiao 316 says, never mind. Listen, while everyone was focusing on the Bob Arum conspiracy theories, and for those that don't know, he's the promoter of Top Rank Boxing, who promotes Pacquiao. While everyone was focusing on that, the judges were asked, like, what was your rationale? And that was kind of where I was focusing. I focused on, well, why? Why did this terrible thing happen? And the judges basically said, well, we don't think CompuStrike was accurate. We think CompuStrike is a bunch of hooey, and with our own eyes, our 70-some-odd-year-old eyes, because I swear to God, it was Waldorf and Stutler who were judging this thing. It was, it was grumpy old men. Dak Lemon was in there. It was father time. Just 70-some-odd-year-old men looked at this thing and said, you know what? Bradley hit him more. Bradley took Pacquiao out of school, and that's the story of the fight, John. That's the story of how Pacquiao's undefeated streak came to an end. They thought Bradley hit him more, even though the computer told him he didn't.
So what you're getting at is that the reason for apparently this worst decision in the history of boxing is that old people think computers are scary?
That they're not accurate. At the very least, you have a group of guys that were ringside that said that their own eyes were better than the computer.
And they're 70.
Yeah.
Now, because the CompuServe, I mean, this is like the standard computer for fights, right?
Yeah, CompuStrike. I think there might be another one, but there's a handful of computer programs that are used for documenting combat statistics.
And while computers aren't perfect, and they can make mistakes, and you should always believe your own eyes, apparently, the computer backs up what everyone else in America saw in this fight.
Not everyone. The judges are American too, but yes.
Yeah, with the exception of Walter Landau and Jack Lemmon judging the sweet science, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the computer backed up what most people saw it with their very own eyes, including apparently every boxing writer on the planet. Dan Raphael of ESPN and Teddy Atlas, Dan Raphael, I believe, Sports Illustrated, and Teddy Atlas of ESPN's Friday Night Fights, I believe, threw their pants at the judges. Dude, seriously, no. Teddy Atlas, when they went to him on SportsCenter, because, I mean, I know when I lived in New York, I was not a huge sports guy, but, you know, and I'm still not particularly, you know, a big sports fan per se, but I do like my combat sports, and
yeah.
I happened to be up, and I wanted to see, it was one of those things where Pacquiao had just won the fight. If he had won my knockout, or if he had been awarded the fight like most people think he should have, I'd have gone to bed. But it's like, John, you remember being a pro wrestling fan once upon a time when it was good.
Yeah.
And you'd watch a pay-per-view, and, you know, I'll talk about the most infamous one, but they were a lot like this. You know, they just screwed Brett out of the title, okay? This is the most infamous moment in professional wrestling history. And it was like you couldn't go to bed. You know, you were so amped up. You're like, oh, my God, what are they going to do next? You know, and even if it wasn't, like, that, you know, that exciting, there was always something happening at the end of a Monday Night Raw, the end of a WWF pay-per-view that always had you hooked. And, like, you know, I'd be on the internet scouring dirt sheets and trying to find anything, something that was going to tell me what was going to happen next, because I was that excited. Well, that's kind of how it was with the Pacquiao fight. Because this thing was so mired in controversy, I actually stayed up to watch SportsCenter because I wanted to see the broadcaster's reaction to it. Because you haven't lived. I described this on Lambert Show as Andy Kaufman-esque. It was a happening. When they read split decision, Max Kellerman, I think, had a stroke. Okay? Max, Howard Lederman threw his pants. Max Kellerman had a stroke. These guys were just, like, looking around at each other going, seriously? I mean, it was so funny. It was like three professional broadcasters on HBO sound like me and you. It was like, what the fuck, you know? It was great.
And to Max Kellerman for analysis. What?
Dude, seriously, he clucked. He literally said, like, straight looking at the camera, in all my years of boxing, I have no idea what to say. Dude, you talk for a living. How do you not know what to say? But he didn't, man. He was that pissed. And what was even great about that is they have Howard, I believe his first name is Howard, Lederman, who's kind of like the Rush Limbaugh of the group from that show, it used to be on ESPN, pardon the interruption. And so, like, he just doesn't say anything, and then in between rounds, they're like, let's go to the Lederman scorecard, and then he kind of does, like, 10 seconds of explaining who won that round, and then they show his scorecard. Mm-hmm. So the whole fight, he almost had it perfect. He almost had a shutout for Pacquiao. And then when they read 115 to 113 on two out of the three scorecards for Bradley, you could almost see him, like, tear the scorecard up and throw it in the air like, oh, so much confetti.
So, and has Floyd Money Mayweather chimed in on this yet?
No. I don't know if you've seen the news on this, but Floyd Money Mayweather is emaciating in the Clark County Detention Center.
Okay.
Have you heard the story?
I have not.
50 words or less. Floyd Money Mayweather has petitioned the court, and I believe they ruled go fuck yourself today, but he had petitioned the court to allow him to commute his sentence to house arrest because he was emaciating in prison on a 2,000-calorie diet and he was starting to decompensate mentally because he had been locked up in isolation. Now, for those of you who don't work in a county jail, isolation is usually a handful of cells, and it's, as the name dictates, you're by yourself, for 23 and a half hours. And the half an hour that you're allowed out of your cell, you're by yourself. You're just by yourself in a bigger area. It's reserved for dignitaries of sorts, you know, police officers, family of police officers, famous people, people they don't want, you know, stabbed in the jail, and that they have to protect them at all costs, or are likely to get stabbed. So he's in ISO, despite the fact that he's in jail on a misdemeanor assault. That's part of it. The other part of it, as I said, he's emaciating. He's losing tons of weight. And people are like, oh, that's a little histrionic that you would use the word emaciate. No, I've actually seen – I saw a guy who in December – for those of you that don't know, I work in a local county jail here in Florida. And I met a guy in December, January who was morbidly obese, really overweight. And just on the diet alone that he's on, lost 80 pounds. And it's not like 80 pounds where he looks like fit. It's 80 pounds where he looks like he's in Somalia. He's just, you know, dropping weight really fast. Because a 2,000-calorie diet, oddly enough, doesn't sound as hefty as – isn't really as hefty as it sounds, especially when you're a professional boxer who, you know, you have to eat that much just to, you know, get fuel in your body to go work out. You know, I'm sure Mayweather eats like 4,000, 6,000 calories a day because he has to put on muscle mass and keep it, you know, and keep his cardio up and do blah, blah, yakety schmackety. Well, he isn't allowed to do any of that in the Clark County Jail. So there, now, that's my argument. That's kind of my defense of it. They kind of went a step further and said, and in addition to all of this, if you don't give him his way and let him do house arrest so that he can continue to work out at home, he won't be able to box anymore. And if he doesn't box, he will cost the city of Las Vegas money.
Wow. We're going to have to end on that pleasant note, but I definitely want to continue that at some time.
That's kind of a punchline of that story.
Wow.
I'm with you to a point, and then you're like, and then you have to let him box. It's like, no. We don't want you to starve or die, but we're not going to let you box, you putz.
I don't even have a segue. We'll see you next week. Take it away, not Hannah Montana.
The plane at LAX with a dream in my cardigan. Welcome to the land of fame excess. Am I gonna fit in? Jumped in the cab, here I am for the first time. Look to the right and I see the Hollywood sign. This is all so crazy. Everybody seems so famous. My stomach's turning and I'm feeling kinda homesick. Too much pressure and I'm nervous. That's when the taxi man turned on the radio. And the day keeps going. And the JT song was on. So I put my hands up to play my song, the butterfly fly away. I'm nodding my head like yeah, moving my hips like yeah. I got my hands up to play my song, and I'm gonna be okay. Yeah, it's a party in the USA. Yeah, it's a party in the USA. Get to the club in my taxi cab. Everybody's looking at me now. Like, who's that chick that's rocking chick? She gotta be from Madison.